Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thank you for tuning in. Glad you could make it. We have an absolutely chock-a-block program for you this evening, so hold off on your phone calls for a while until I give you the signal, okay? Chicken Hawk Chucklenut spoke before one of his favorite backdrops today, the U.S. military, to sing the praises of his miracle surge in Iraq. And the wonders of Maliki's superb political leadership and how our Congress here could take some lessons from the Iraqis on how to build a successful economy and pass important legislation in a timely fashion. Really? Meanwhile, Iraq is imploding. It is blowing to pieces, which we'll get into tonight a little bit later. But to hear the AWOL semi-coherent Simeon, that would be our delightful president. Iraq is now some kind of nirvana, a veritable Xanadu of peace, hope, and prosperity. Spontaneous soccer games. Happy little Iraqis running around saying, can I have an ice cream? So with all the miraculous progress here, when can we bring the troops home? Well, he just doesn't know. The speech this freak gave today was surreal. And we're going to share some of the lowlights with you tonight. You're just going to have to bite the bullet and put up with it. All right? But before we get into the usual bog that we get into in this program every night, I have a couple of pieces of news here that one of them is good and one of them is just a relief. I wouldn't say the second one is good news, but the good news is that former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman, who has been in prison for almost a year on federal corruption charges, is to be released from prison after the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals granted him an appeal bond. And as reported yesterday all over the web, the House Judiciary Committee is seeking to hold a hearing where Siegelman will testify about the weird Karl Rovian prosecution this man went through that led to his incarceration. So for everybody who's been following this, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals has granted former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman an appeals bond so he can get out of the clutches of these rat bastards in Alabama. And that is good news. That is definitely good news. I'm sure his daughter is just beside herself tonight. And the other piece of news here, again, I can't call this good, but it is a relief. This is, according to KETV Channel 7 in Omaha, an imprisoned father went to his dying daughter's bedside yesterday, a visit federal authorities allowed, only after being deluged with letters and phone calls and emails from across the nation. J.C. Yeager, who is 10, has terminal brain cancer. Her family has been pleading with federal officials in Yankton, South Dakota, to allow her father, Jason, to see his daughter before she dies. Now, remember, did we talk about this week? Was that this week? Earlier this week, I think it was. This child has dealt with brain cancer since she was 3. And she had requested that her father be with her when she dies. And the father is scheduled for halfway house release this August anyway. But the prison officials in South Dakota said, no, it doesn't rise. The situation doesn't rise to the level of an extraordinary circumstance. Well, we talked about it. I'm sure other people talked about it. And the authorities relented. On Wednesday, yesterday afternoon, prison guards drove Jason Yeager to a Lincoln, Nebraska hospice, where he spent several hours at his daughter's bedside. No one else was allowed in the room except the dad, the daughter, and the federal escorts. Sources said the father did leave his daughter's side to consult with hospice counselors to get some direction on how to speak with the girl about what she was facing. And prior to Wednesday, the prison warden had allowed Yeager 3 visits to his daughter, but had denied requests for longer furlough or an early transfer to a halfway house in Council Bluffs, Iowa. As I mentioned, the warden told Yeager that the whole situation was not viewed as an extraordinary circumstance. What a rat son of a bitch. It's one thing to be a warden. I know. You've got problems. Hell, I watch these prison weird shows on MSNBC, Inside Prison, and, you know, every once in a while I watch something like that. And I know how tough it is on the wardens and the guards. On the other hand, I also know how tough it is on the inmates from watching. I mean, I haven't been an inmate, but I've seen this over and over again, and especially for people who are in there on drug convictions. Dear God. But anyway, letters and emails from across the country reached the Yeager family and the prison and appealed to officials to allow this man to see his daughter. The family had asked the media to share their story with the hope of encouraging prison officials to allow the visit, and they relented and allowed it, as if it's a big deal. This is a nonviolent crime. He's scheduled to be released to a halfway house in 4 months anyway. Jason Yeager, the dad, had requested, filed an appeal for clemency with Bush. Yeager spent 4 years in a federal prison on methamphetamine-related charges. Methamphetamine related, whatever the hell that means. On Thursday, today, JC's mother described JC's condition now as minute by minute, saying the girl had gone into respiratory distress 3 times today. And for those of you who have witnessed death up close, in a hospital setting, somebody suffering from an illness like this, you know what going into respiratory distress repeatedly means. It means that if the nursing staff or the hospital protocol is humane, they bring out the morphine. Like I said, I can't call that a good story, but at least this little girl got a chance to be held by her father as per her request. Oh, okay, let's put a little space between that and moving on to the ugliness of the day. Deep breath.
Well, there is a little bit more related good news in, yeah, in a jailbreak story of sorts.
What's that?
Well, it was breaking news on MSNBC a few minutes ago, and I almost had a heart attack, and you said you've known about it all day.
Oh, the Don Siegelman release.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
There's some more happy news.
Yeah, well, that was the first thing I said tonight.
Oh. As Emily Letello would say, never mind.
Did you get up and leave your position at the control panel there? That was the first... Oh, never mind. Oh.
I got to stop doing that stuff.
I know you do. You really do. Stay away from the cooking, Sherry. This is from Bill. Mike, this came in last night. It was urgent. It came in after we were off the air. The subject line says, urgent correction, Mike, and it was written by Bill. Bill writes, Mike, you just identified Muqtada al-Sadr as an Iranian proxy. This is a very serious error, which the government is trying to promulgate in their attempt to rationalize a military strike against Iran if the so-called surge shows more failure than it already has. Al-Sadr is indeed an Iraqi nationalist, and his main connection to Iran is they both have the same religious sect, i.e. Shia. It is the Badr Brigade, which has been trained and armed by Iran and is a committed enemy of the Sadrists. No, wait a minute. I'm getting all confused here. Anyway, al-Sadr does not want Iranian influence in Iraq. Even his father, who was killed by Saddam, who started this group, rejected Iranian influence. If al-Sadr calls off the ceasefire and things begin to go to pieces in Iraq, you'll hear more and more from Bush and Cheney and the generals that it is Iran's fault, when indeed Muqtada al-Sadr is fighting Iranian influence when he opposes Maliki and the Badr Brigade, people who are all very close to the Iranians. This is not a two-party system in Iraq. It is a muddled mess of tribal, religious, and political factions, which the Bush administration has no conception about, and is thus backing Maliki's attempt to align himself with the Badr group for his own political aspirations. Please don't continue to be confused about this very key issue. Failure to do so will only help the administration in their push to rationalize military action against Iran, which will result in a total and irreversible catastrophe for our own political situation domestically and worldwide. Yeah, I spent the day listening and reading. Thank you, Bill. Thanks for sending it last night, because I did say that Muqtada al-Sadr was closely aligned with the Iranians, which is not true. Maliki is closely aligned with the Iranians, even though all three groups are Shia. But as Bill pointed out, al-Sadr is a nationalist. And I have something here I'm going to share with you when we come back. Five things you need to know to understand this violence now that has erupted in Iraq and what it means, okay? And this was extremely helpful to me. So stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Florida will oversee the count. The Supreme Court will decide if we don't get the right amount.
Next best thing to an impeachment hearing, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Past the hour. Before we get into the five things you need to know to understand the latest violence in Iraq, just a quick program note here. Our affiliate in... where is it, Kathy? In Sacramento, KPOJ? KSAC, I'm sorry. KSAC in Sacramento has decided for business reasons to switch formats from their progressive talk station. I think next Monday coming, they will switch over to gospel music format, I believe, is the notice we got. Is that right, Ms. Producer? Okay, which means simply that folks who are listening on KSAC in Sacramento, you can still hear the program. You'll have to stream it or pick it up through XM or Sirius, or perhaps the program will be picked up by another station in Sacramento. But as of Monday, KSAC is switching formats. They're going to go to gospel. Okay, gospel music. All right. In the last 2 days, this fighting has spread across Shia-dominated parts of Iraq. We back Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, and he ordered 50,000 Iraqi troops to crack down. You like that? Of course, with our air support on Shia militias in Basra. Now, Basra is very important. It's the center of the workable Iraqi oil fields right now. In addition to that, U.S. forces have surrounded one of the suburbs of Baghdad, Sadr City, and fighting has been reported also in the southern cities of Kut, Diwaniya, Karbala, and Hilla. And this time is for real. This mullah, Muqtada al-Sadr, had declared a unilateral ceasefire last year. And again, keep in mind, as Bill pointed out, and as we now know, thanks to my paying attention to what the hell I should have been paying attention to, he's a nationalist and he's a cleric, and his ceasefire, unilateral ceasefire, is collapsing. One militia man loyal to al-Sadr told the Christian Science Monitor's reporter Sam Dagger, quote, "The ceasefire is over. We have been told to fight the Americans," end quote. Now, this guy Dogger, the reporter Dogger, added that this is the same man when interviewed a couple of months ago in January had stated that he was abiding by the ceasefire and that he was keeping busy running his cellular phone store. Well, that's over now. A political track is also in play here. This is at alternate.org, by the way. Joshua Holland and Reed Girard. The political track is this. Muqtada al-Sadr has called on his followers to take to the streets to demand Maliki's resignation. Now, remember, Maliki is our puppet. He's the one that we made sure got elected, but it's not working out quite the way the Bush crime family wanted it to work out, since Maliki and Ahmadinejad in Iran seem to have a touchy-feely relationship going here. So into the middle of this comes Muqtada al-Sadr, the nationalist, who says, no, I've had enough of this crap. So anyway, al-Sadr has called on his followers to take to the streets and demand the resignation of this puppet government in Iraq. And the nationalist lawmakers in the Iraqi parliament are trying to push a no-confidence vote challenging the entire regime. So it's collapsing like the house of cards it was to begin with. Thousands of supporters of Muqtada al-Sadr and his so-called Mahdi army militia are in the streets of Baghdad today. They are protesting the Iraqi army's assault on the southern port city of Basra. There appears to be intense fighting. I watched Michael Ware tonight on CNN being interviewed by Wolf Blitzer. The guy looks like he's on the verge of a nervous breakdown. Michael Ware, who has been providing some of the best on-the-spot coverage of what's been going on in this sad country that we decided to invade and murder and destroy, or the Bush decided. And what we're seeing here is the utter chaos that has been predicted by anyone who's been paying attention to what's going on in that sad country. All right, we have a break here. When we come back, we're going to take a look at the five things you need to know to understand this violence in Iraq. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
George W. Bush will give a country a push. He's the man who'll do what's right for me and you. George W. Bush will give a country a push and put us back on the road to what's right and true. George W. Bush.
It's about 26 before the hour. All right, here are the five things we need to know to understand the latest violence in Iraq, and this comes courtesy of Joshua Holland and Raid Girard, and it's posted at alternate.org. Here's number one. A visible manifestation of Iraq's central but not under-reported political conflict. It is not sectarian violence. Iraq, which had experienced little or no sectarian-based violence prior to the U.S. invasion, has been plagued with sectarian militias fighting for the streets of Iraq's formerly heterogeneous neighborhoods. And so-called sectarian violence has become the Americans' primary explanation for the instability that has plagued this country. But the sectarian-based street fighting is a symptom of a larger political conflict, one that has been poorly analyzed in the mainstream press in this country. The real source of conflict in Iraq, and the reason political reconciliation has been so difficult, is a fundamental disagreement over what the future of Iraq will look like. Loosely defined, what we're seeing here is a clash of Iraqi nationalists with Muqtada al-Sadr as their most influential voice. These nationalists all desire a unified Iraqi state and public sector management of the country's vast oil reserves, and who forcefully reject foreign influence on Iraq's political process, be it from the United States, Iran, or other outside forces. The nationalists, led by Muqtada al-Sadr, now represent a majority in Iraq's parliament, but are opposed by what might be called Iraqi separatists, who envision a soft partition of Iraq into at least four semi-autonomous and sectarian-based regional entities, who also will welcome the privatization of the Iraqi energy sector and the rest of the Iraqi economy, and rely on foreign support to maintain their power. All right, so that's the division. You've got the nationalists who do not want to see their country dismembered, who want control over their the major resource they have, oil, and who essentially want to be left alone. They don't want anyone telling them how coming into their country and telling them how to run it. The other group, ostensibly headed by Maliki, who is our puppet in Iraq, wants to see Iraq dismembered and divided into four regions. Maliki heads the clique that also wants to see Iraq's oil turned over for exploitation by foreign oil companies. Among the leaders of that group, of course, would be U.S. oil companies. All right? Here's number two. The U.S. is propping up an unpopular regime. Muqtada al-Sadr has support because of his platform, the unification platform. One of the ironies of the reporting out of Iraq is the ubiquitous characterization of Muqtada al-Sadr as a renegade, a radical, or a militant cleric, despite the fact that he is the only leader of significance in the country who has ordered his followers to stand down. His ostensible militancy appears to rise primarily from his opposition to U.S.-led occupation of Iraq. Yeah, that's what we do. If someone doesn't play the game in their own country that we go in and tell them to play, then they are labeled renegade or militant or insurgent. Think Hamas in the occupied territories of Palestine. Same thing there. Now, the truth is that Muqtada al-Sadr is arguably the most popular leader among a large section of the Iraqi population, and he has forcefully rejected sectarian conflict and sought to bring together representatives of Iraq's various ethnic and sectarian groups in an effort to create real national reconciliation. Now, that's a process that Maliki has failed to accomplish. Sadr can do it. Muqtada al-Sadr can do it, obviously. The writer says it's vitally important to understand that Sadr's popularity and legitimacy is a result of his having a platform that's favored by an overwhelming majority of Iraqis. Not Maliki, not the U.S., not the coalition, but al-Sadr. Now, most Iraqis, therefore, favor a strong central government free of the influence of militias. They oppose, by a 2-to-1 margin, the privatization of Iraq's energy sector. They favor a U.S. withdrawal on a short timeline. They oppose al-Qaeda and the ideology of Osama bin Laden. And, to a lesser degree, Iranian influence on Iraq's internal affairs. Now, wouldn't it make sense, let me pause from the article, wouldn't it make sense that this should be the guy that we should back, right? He is trying to unify the country, and seems to have the ability to do so. He wants nothing to do, and his faction wants nothing to do with al-Qaeda. They want nothing to do with the Iranians, other than perhaps have them as trading partners. But the fly in the ointment is they want to control their own natural resources, the oil. And remember, it's not the oil, but that's a lie. It is the oil. It's always been about the oil in Iraq and the oil near Iraq. And as the writers at Alternate say, as in Vietnam, the United States is backing an unpopular and decidedly undemocratic government in Iraq, and that simple fact explains much of the violent resistance that is going on in Iraq even as we speak. Number three. Iraqi forces, so-called, are in fact Iranian and U.S.-backed Shiite militias. Now, when you hear that, you know, Iraqi forces are trying to crush this rebellion. Those Iraqi forces are Iranian-backed Shiite militias, and we back them too. Every headline this week has featured some variation of the storyline of Iraqi security forces battling Shiite militias. But the reality is, it's a battle between Shiite militias, separatists and nationalists, with one militia garbed in Iraqi army uniforms and supported by U.S. air power, and the other in civilian clothes, part of the Muqtada al-Sadr's Mahdi army. It has always been the great irony of the occupation of Iraq that our man in Baghdad is also Tehran's man in Baghdad, Maliki. Maliki heads the Dawa Party, which has long enjoyed close ties to Iran and relies on support from an organization called SIIC, which is a staunchly pro-Iranian party, and its powerful Badr militia. Is this maddening or what? Four. There's only five. Let's call it Colombia-style democracy. Basra has been engulfed in a simmering conflict since before the British pulled their troops back to a remote base near the airport and turned over the city to Iraqi authorities. But the timing of this crackdown, the one that started 2 days ago, is not coincidental. Iraqi separatists, that would be Dawa, SIIC, and others, are expected to do poorly in the regional elections, while those backing Muqtada al-Sadr are widely anticipated to make significant gains. Again, think Hamas. It is widely perceived by those loyal to Muqtada al-Sadr that this is an attempt to wipe out the movement he leads prior to the elections. That's what this this crackdown, as Maliki calls it, this violence. It's an attempt to wipe out the movement Muqtada al-Sadr leads prior to the elections and minimize the influence that Iraqi nationalists are poised to gain. The U.S. doesn't want that. We don't want nationalists, you see. We don't want people who will work their asses off to put their country back together and make their country strong in the region. No, 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 no. We want a puppet regime, and we want to insist on their oil. The article goes on. The United States, for its part, continues to take sides in this conflict. In addition to providing air power, U.S. forces are enforcing the curfew in Sadr City. Rather, we're taking sides rather than playing the role of neutral mediator. That's because the interests of the Bush administration and its allies are aligned with Maliki and his coalition. That they are not aligned with the interests of most Iraqis is never mentioned in the Western press. But you know that now, Truth Seeker, and so do I. Of course, we've known this, haven't we? Al-Maliki is nothing. He's a puppet. He will do what his American puppet masters tell him to do, or he has so far. Number five, a chip off the old block, Maliki's attempt to criminalize dissent, just like Saddam did, okay? It's unclear whether Muqtada al-Sadr has lifted the ceasefire entirely or simply freed his fighters to defend themselves. He continues to call for peaceful resistance. But whatever the case may be, it's not entirely accurate to say that he chose this conflict. The reality is that while his army was holding the ceasefire, attacks on and detention of his people have continued unabated. Sadr renewed the ceasefire last month, but he did so over the urging of his top aides, who argued that their movement was threatened with annihilation. He later authorized his followers to carry weapons for self-defense to head off a mutiny within his ranks. Now, those are the five things that I think you and I need to be acutely aware of. Just like, for some reason, this reminds me of the Tet Offensive in Vietnam back in 1968. Just when we were told by the lion bastards who got us into and kept us in that bloodbath, oh, everything's fine, we got it under control, which was an absolute lie. And that's what we're seeing the past two or three days in Iraq. More on this when we come back.
It's about rich white men getting richer. It's about fear,
it's about fear.
And control,
control
of those barrels of black gold. Yeah, step up, folks, to another war when we never really say what we're fighting for. It's easy to pretend we're defending our natives.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
10 before the hour. So what we are seeing, what we've been seeing in Iraq for the past several months with all this talk, all these lies, all this magician stuff, you know, look over here while I make the bunny appear over there. The reason the killing has been down to a degree, especially where it concerns American soldiers, although 2007, I believe, took more American lives, I think, than any other year, or if I got that wrong. But the reason the violence came down towards the end of the year was because Muqtada al-Sadr declared a unilateral ceasefire, and the Sunni militias, of which Muqtada al-Sadr has no connection at all, were paid by the U.S. Occupational force, the whoever has the big barrels of money was handing out, $10, $20 a day for the Sunni militias not to kill Americans. That's over. But the lies that you and I have been fed, and the lies that this filthy news media in this country have been pumping into us rather than telling us the truth. It took me, 15 minutes to go over these 5 points. 15 minutes. Imagine how much more quickly it could have been done with a visual medium like television. But as the alternate, as Joshua Holland and Reed Girard wrote it at Aldernet today, the Maliki regime has set an ultimatum demanding that the militias, the nationalist militias, Maliki, our puppet, is demanding that the militias who want to see Iraq survive lay down their arms within the next 2 days or face what Maliki calls, quote, more serious consequences, end quote. Now, Muqtada al-Sadr has also issued an ultimatum, and that is the Maliki government must cease its attacks on his followers or his followers will escalate. Now, would you call this an extremely dangerous situation? Who is right in the middle of this? That's right. 130, 140, 150,000 U.S. soldiers and Marines. The truth is that these factions in Iraq, not Maliki is a puppet. So naturally, he's going to suck the fingers of the person holding the strings. But the people of Iraq want our asses gone. They want us out of their country. Why are we staying there? You know the answer to that as well as I do. And as the writers at Alternet say at the end, given the degree to which the coalition, that's us, has continued to stir a hornet's nest, we may be seeing a perfect illustration of the dangers of believing our own propaganda playing out as Iraq once again is set aflame. Joshua Holland is an Alternet staff writer. Reed Girard is Iraq consultant to the American Friends Service Committee. Now, you can get this. Just go to alternate.org. 5 things you need to know to understand the latest violence in Iraq. The thing that tore my brain to pieces today when I read this is the clear understanding. I mean, these guys put it together for me, but the clear understanding that we have no more business being there if the objective was to overthrow Saddam Hussein. Accomplished. If the objective was to get the weapons of mass destruction, accomplished. If the objection, I mean, I can go right down the list. All of it. Every bit of it. And you know this, we knew this 5 years ago. Was based on filthy lies. So here we are. Now, when this bastard George W. Bush stands up there trying to justify the fact that he sent 4,000 American soldiers and servicemen to their deaths, another 100,000 to grievous injuries, and God only knows how many to suffer PTSD for the rest of their lives, in addition to up to a million dead Iraqis. When this rat bastard stands up there and says, well, yeah, I think it was worth it. Of course it's worth it. Democracy. Hey, we're establishing a beachhead. No, you're not, you lying bastard. And you never had that in mind. And neither did Cheney or the rest of these killers who put this plan into play. So here we are. Now, when we come back, after the break, we're going to play for you some sound from this psychopathic George Bush, who talked about terror, and about the surge, going to talk about surge, and about Iraq, going to talk about Iraq, and what we're doing over there in Iraq. And I want you to hear this. Now that you and I know the truth of this uprising that's occurring right now. And again, think of Fatah and Hamas in the occupied territories. We decided, and the Israelis decided, well, we want democracy in the Palestinian territory. We want democracy there. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to let you folks vote. So they voted. And who did they vote for? They voted for Hamas. And what did the U.S. and Israel say to that? Oh, you little rat sons of bitches! You were not... No. We don't mean that kind of democracy. Are you crazy? We mean we want a regime we can control. That's the kind of democracy. And here we are, same situation in Iraq. On the Iraqi militias don't have to stop and pick up stones off the ground to fight against their oppressor. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's 6 and a half past the hour. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for staying with us or just joining us. Getting back to the situation in Baghdad, the lies that we have been told were not just about the invasion and occupation, but also about what has happened since. As Spitfire writes regarding Muqtada al-Sadr, Spitfire writes, here's a guy that the pro-war media couldn't mention without adding the qualifier radical cleric. Even when reporting that he pleaded for calm between Sunnis and Shia after the Golden Mosque was bombed. Spitfire says, I don't buy any of the crap being peddled. Iraq isn't going to be decided by a bunch of white guys in suits sitting at a desk on television. Their latest talking point is that the Iraqis need to learn what democracy is. That reminds me of the old Vietnamization of the Vietnamese. The situation in Iraq is reaching that boil over point, truth seekers. We have not seen, we've seen resistance in Fallujah and a few other places, but we have not seen a countrywide uprising against the Maliki government and its handlers. That would be us. And it appears that this is in the offing now. In Basra, half the city, according to the latest from the New York Times, this was late this afternoon. As much as half the city remained under militia control. Hospitals in some parts of the city are reported full, and violence is continuing to spread. The Iraqi army's offensive there is an important political test for the government of Prime Minister al-Maliki, and for American forces that are eager to demonstrate that the Iraqi units they have trained can fight effectively on their own. And they go on to say, but if the assault in Basra leads the Mahdi army to break completely with this current ceasefire, which has helped to tamp down attacks in Iraq during the past year, there is a risk of escalating violence and of replaying 2004. That year, the militias fought intense battles with American forces that destabilized the entire country. Now, in a speech at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base today, Chuckle-Nuts said Mr. Maliki's decision to wage the offensive in this, quote, shows his leadership and his commitment to enforce the law in an even-handed manner, end quote. The reason Bush can say that is because you and I are totally ignorant of the truth, or so Bush thinks. So let's listen to him. He used one of his favorite backdrops today, the military, to give what he called an update on his beloved occupation of Iraq. He's got a lot of propagandizing to do before Petraeus appears before Congress next month, and he's got to explain the recent bloodshed in Basra and this growing, what do you want to call it, uprising, spreading violence, despite the surge. Now, this is from his opening salvo, how Americans liberated the Rockies. Now they have a fabulous constitution, yada, yada, yada.
This museum pays tribute to to great aircraft and great airmen and women. From the first flyers of the Great War to the aces of World War II to the daring pilots of Korea and Vietnam.
Like you were supposed to be?
And over the past 6 years, a new generation of American airmen and women have joined that storied history. It can feel like distant history, but it was only 5 years ago that Iraq was one of the most brutal dictatorships on earth, a totalitarian nightmare where any election was a sham. And dissenters often found themselves buried in mass graves.
Found themselves?
In a matter of 15 months, the Iraqi people reclaimed their sovereignty.
Ah.
They went on to choose an interim government.
Ah.
And to ratify the most democratic constitution in the Arab world.
Really? Well, then everything is going swimmingly. How do you find yourself buried in a mass grave? How do you do that? Now, he's talking at the National Museum of the United States Air Force. That's at Wright-Patterson Air Base in Dayton, Ohio. Now his terror talk turns towards the surge, which this moron seems to think was, like, totally the most awesome military achievement in a whole bunch of years of history and stuff, maybe even the bestest thing in all the history years ever. Minimind here explains why he surged in the first place. After watching all that bad stuff on the TV screens that was going on over there in Iraq, and now the surge is working because, you know, the Iraqis are playing soccer.
We took a hard look at the situation and responded with the surge. This dramatic shift in policy had two primary goals. The first was to improve security conditions. So I ordered 30,000 additional soldiers and Marines into Iraq.
Yeah, how's that going?
And gave them a new mission to focus on protecting the Iraqi people.
Ah.
The surge is doing what it was designed to do.
Really?
It's bringing America closer to a key strategic victory in the war against these extremists and radicals.
Oh, my.
I talked to General Odierno. He was the number two man in Iraq. He just came back after courageously serving our country. He came to the Oval Office, and here's what he told me. He said he flew over Baghdad 15 months ago, and he couldn't see a single soccer game. On his final flight last month, he counted more than 180.
180?
Now, that may sound normal to us, and we take it for granted, but it is a sign that the surge is working, And civil society is beginning to grow.
180 soccer games? God damn, that really is true, George. That may sound normal to us. Are you out of your freaking mind? Do you know what 180 soccer games would look like? And what the hell is a general doing flying around counting soccer games? Why isn't he killing people? That's what we pay him to do, you dumb bastard. I have to admit, though, protecting the Iraqi people, since that's what we're doing, does seem like a much better strategy than our old plan of just torturing, raping, and killing them, you know, and stacking them up naked and putting hoods on them and running electrical wires to their testicles. And, oh, by the way, they found a torture dungeon in Iraq. No. Ours. 180 soccer game! 180! 180, by God, that's a sign the surge is working. 180 of them sons of bitches. And General Odierno, you know, he's the number two guy over there. He told me this. He did. Next Chicken Hawk, Chuckle Nuts, praises that great political genius, al-Maliki, for such astounding and cunning work in Iraq. Here's a little more from Surge Boy.
Prime Minister Maliki's bold decision.
Maliki!
And it was a bold decision. To go after the illegal groups in Basra shows his leadership and his commitment to enforce the law in an even-handed manner.
He's just like Winston Churchill.
It also shows the progress the Iraqi security forces have made during the surge.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Iraqi forces planned this operation.
Oh.
And they deployed substantial extra forces for it. They're leading the operation.
Sure they are.
Prime Minister Maliki has traveled to Basra to oversee it firsthand.
Uh-huh.
More than 100,000 Iraqis
100,000.
Have joined their nation's security forces. In other words, there was an Iraqi surge to match our own.
100,000.
These Iraqis are fighting and sacrificing for their country.
No, they're not.
They want to live in a free society. Iraqi mothers want their children to grow up in peace, just like American mothers do.
Then let's get out of there!
The surge is yielding major changes in Iraqi political life.
Oh, my God.
And that is important. Before the surge, politics at every level was shutting down. You know, for ordinary citizens, politics were a distant concern. I mean, after all, they were simply trying to keep their families alive.
Oh, and then we changed strategies, and our new mission became to protect the Iraqis instead of killing them. Is that what you're saying? This is insane, but let's continue. Maliki's got... All right, we got to take a little break here. When are we going to take the break? Right now? In 10 seconds. All right, we'll take the break. Then we come back. We've got two more of these. I get carried away. I'm not watching the clock. Because I know, and you know, you see, what the truth is. And here stands this idiot. Here he stands. And the audacity of him, a guy that was in the Texas Air National Guard to become a fighter pilot, you know, like Air Force and stuff, and then went AWOL, then deserted. And there he stands, talking to pilots? Oh, my God.
Are you perfectly calm?
A peace, free, and secure Iraq in the midst of the Middle East will have enormous historical impact.
22 past the hour. Bush, National Museum of the United States Air Force today, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, talking about how things are going just real well in Iraq. Meanwhile, Iraq is imploding. Muqtada al-Sadr, who declared unilaterally a ceasefire last summer, has now decided to hell with it. There's no advantage. He wants the foreigners out of his country. He wants al-Qaeda out of his country. He wants the U.S. out of the country. He wants the coalition out. He wants the Iranians out. He wants his country to be for Iraqis, and he wants the Iraqis to control their own resources. Al-Maliki, our little puppet, who also happens to be best buds with Iran's Ahmadinejad, is saying, no, we want to split this country into four chunks and give all the oil rights to foreign oil companies. Tra-la, tra-la. Back to Bush. Maliki's government is now so perfect, it has surpassed our own U.S. Congress in efficiency, productivity, and economic policy. Well, there may be some truth to that. Wow, we should all move there, or at least adopt the Iraqi model. I've never heard of a miracle as stupendous as Bush's surge. Here he is again.
They're striving to build a modern democracy on the rubble of three decades of tyranny.
No, your invasion.
In a region of the world that has been hostile to freedom. And they're doing it while under assault from one of history's most brutal terrorist networks.
He's talking about
us? We've been arguing about the role of the federal government relative to the states for a long time here in America. We've been trying to get the balance right. Well, that's what the Iraqis are now struggling through.
The balance?
You know, they got their budget passed. Sometimes it takes our Congress a while to get its budget passed. Nevertheless, some members of Congress decided the best way to encourage progress in Baghdad was to criticize and threaten Iraq's leaders while they're trying to work out their differences.
Oh, my God.
But hectoring was not what the Iraqi leaders needed. What they needed was security. And that is what the surge has provided.
This is astonishing to listen to this. Does this dumb bastard sit in a dark room all day when he's not napping? Does he not understand? Is he not aware of what's happening? Do they not provide him just cliff notes of his little war and occupation? Do they keep him away from television news? As funky as television news is, when you see someone like Michael Ware saying, what the hell? The whole country is starting to go up in flames. And Bush says this? He says we've been arguing about the role of the federal government relative to the states for a long time here in America. Well, not really, you dumbass. That was settled when we ratified the Constitution. What are you talking about? So we should just adopt the Iraqi plan? Is that it? Chucklenuts, let me think. Who could we get to illegally invade us, bomb our cities, loot our wealth, kill a few hundred thousand of our people so we too can have a perfect legislative branch? Canada? Hey, Canada! Canada, you want to come and do this to us? And he says, some members of our Congress decided the best way to encourage progress in Baghdad was to criticize and threaten Iraq's leaders? Spank. Spank, spank. Bad Congress. Trying to stop the war. And all that other nonsense. Bad Congress. Is this the last one? Jesus, tell me it's the last one, Kathy. Oh, good. We get to wait till after the break. Oh, good. So I can, I don't know, clear my ears out. One more from Man or Monkey. He's going to tell us, after the progress of the miracle surge here, what the next step is. Okay? That's what we're about to discover. If you'll stay with me for just a few moments. We'll come back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Yeah, proud? Or will we be ashamed?
Faster than a flying monkey, more powerful than a special prosecutor, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
It's about 25 before the hour. We've just got to come away from the program tonight. I do, and folks who are listening, with a clear understanding of what's going on. Because we're not going to get the straight story from American media, and the Bush crime family lies about everything. I'm sure there are other liberal or progressive talk show hosts who are parsing this thing down also, but, you know, I'm only concerned about how I understand it and how the people who take the time and have the patience to come to this program to try to get an understanding. So that's the reason we're going through all this tonight. This thing is getting so completely out of hand in Iraq, which means, yes, an awful lot of death and destruction for the Iraqi people, but it also means our people are caught in a crossfire in a place we never should have gone to begin with. I'm sorry, that is becoming such a tiresome phrase. 4,000 of our people dead now because of this sick son of a bitch in the White House and his gang. And now it's going to get worse. Muqtada al-Sadr and the Iraqi people want us out. Al-Maliki and his gang want to do whatever it takes to please the overlords. The guys in uniforms, the desert camo, the guys with the stars on their shoulders, the ones who are saying, Mr. Al-Maliki, listen up, boy. We want you to take 50 or 60,000 of your best trained troops now and go down to Basra and attack Muqtada al-Sadr's Mahdi army. You're going to get slaughtered, but, you know, we have to show something to the folks back home. Go, now! Last one from Manor Monkey tonight. After the progress of the miracle surge, what is the next step? Well, surely we can bring our troops home now that the surge has proven to be the most magically wondrous military plan in all of recorded history, right?
The improvements in security resulting from the surge are also enabling Iraqis to make progress on their economy. Almost every key economic indicator has turned around.
Yay!
Since the surge began, business registrations have increased by more than 9%.
Woo!
Total inflation has fallen by more than 60 percentage points.
It's down to 200%.
Investment in the energy and telecom industries has increased.
Except for the explosions today.
Agricultural sector is improving.
Oh?
Oil production is up, particularly north of Baghdad.
Yeah, in the Kurdish sections.
Having witnessed all this progress from the surge, the natural question is, what are the next steps?
Nuke Iran!
This week, I've been discussing that question with my national security team in Washington, as well as with General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker in Baghdad.
Oh, you're such a leader.
I'm going to carefully consider the recommendations of Secretary Gates, Joint Chiefs of Staff, and those on the ground, General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker.
Then what?
And I'll announce my decisions soon after I have fully met with them and heard their recommendations.
Fully met with them?
And so the principle behind my decision on our troop levels will be ensuring that we succeed in Iraq.
But you were saying we've succeeded already with the miracle surge. Why can't the troops come home now, chuckle nuts? The oil revenues are up, didn't you say? Maliki's the best leader ever. Corn is in the field. 180 soccer games all over the place. A virtual paradise. What's left to do? Once and for all, you rotten human being, how do you define success with your invasion and your occupation? How do you define it? If you just gave a definition, then all of our people can come home starting Monday, right? I'm so sick of living in a country where the leader is a goddamn idiot! Not to mention insane! Oh, excuse me, I'm screaming again. Hi, Mike. Don't know if you caught the front line, Bush's war. I didn't, but just read this LA Times review, which has a quote from that special that has turned my stomach into a seething cauldron of total rage with a couple of cups of complete hopelessness. The LA Times quotes the Frontline program, quote, "As for the human factor figuring into war planning, try retired Marine Lieutenant General Michael DeLong's explanation of how he and Army General Tommy Franks decided to endorse the bid by Rumsfeld and Cheney to convince Bush to order an invasion." Quote, "Well, General Franks likes margaritas," General DeLong said, "and I've got a margarita recipe. Of course, I'm a tequila connoisseur. And so we sat down and had some margaritas and tequila and walked through, is this the right thing to do for us, for the country? Can we look our troops in the eye and say, you're going to die tomorrow, and here's why? And the answer was yes." Son of a bitch. Bridget goes on, "Mike, who are these people? Hey, Tommy, why don't you come over and we'll have a few margaritas and play poker and we'll use American kids and Iraqi babies and women and old men as chips. Sound like fun?" It seems as though every day there's another quote from one of these ghouls that reinforces what I've suspected for years. Bridget writes, "They are alien lizard people. I'm serious. These two generals, and Bush, and Cheney, and Rumsfeld, and Condoleezza Rice, and Madeleine Albright, the list goes on. All of them have some kind of cold, green slime running through their veins. We've labeled them sociopaths, psychopaths, narcissistic personality disorders, but none of those terms even come close to the reality, because those are diagnoses we use for human beings. And these aliens are not that. I don't recognize them, Mike. That someone could have some margaritas and tequila to figure out if it's okay to send kids out to die and then brag about it as though that were normal behavior? I've been thinking about Bob's piece the other night about how one realization, if it gets in, can change how you see everything. Well, this little bit today was mine. Perhaps I was particularly susceptible after sobbing through Bill Moyer's interview with Phil Donahue about this documentary, Body of War, and watching a lot of clips from it. If you don't know about it, it follows a young man who was wounded in Iraq, paralyzed from his chest down, through everything he has had to go through to try to live a life and what he's doing to speak out about what has happened to him. It opens in theaters April 4th, I think. But whatever the reason, General DeLong and the margaritas got me. I've been going through my day, talking to customers, packing orders, going to the doctor, playing doorman to the cat, and every few minutes I stop for a moment and say, they made the decision drunk. They decided to kill tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people, drunk. I hate these people, Mike. No, wait, I can never call them that again. I hate these alien slime balls who are sucking everything that's good and decent in this country down into the sewer where they live. How do we send them back to whatever dark abyss of the universe they came from before their poison infects us all? Is there a repellent, an antidote? Arthur C. Clarke isn't even alive anymore to ask for ideas. I don't just want to take my country back. I want my planet back. Bridget. So we sat down and had some margaritas and tequilas and walked through the, is this the right thing to do for us and for the country? Can we look our troops in the eyes and say, you're going to die tomorrow and here's why? And the answer was yes. You see, I got a margarita recipe. I'm a tequila connoisseur. And so we sat down and had some margaritas and tequila and walked through, is this the right thing to do for us, for the country? Can we look our troops in the eyes and say, you're going to die tomorrow, and here's why? And the answer was yes. The answer was yes. Yeah, we can do that. God damn right we can do that. Here, give me another drink. Can we look our troops in the eyes and say, you're going to die tomorrow, and here's why? And the answer was yes. Retired Marine Lieutenant General Michael DeLong explaining how he and Army General Tommy Franks decided to say yes to the pressure from Rumsfeld and Cheney to first convince Bush to order an invasion of Iraq and then to carry it out. Unbelievable. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. We're going to start taking some phone calls. So if you want to get on the line now, 800-989-1480. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Is this like a huge distillery?
Some people say alcohol makes you less lucid, and I think that's true if you're kind of stupid. I'm not that kind that gets himself burned twice. Some say liquor kills the cells in your head, and for that matter, so does getting out of bed. When I exit, I'll go out gracefully, shot in my hand. The pow, 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 power of positive drinking.
Republicans, the pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Now, just I'm going to squeeze this in before the break. First of all, Mike in Connecticut wrote, Mike, I can't get over that astoundingly callous comment that Dick Cheney spewed on the fifth anniversary of the Iraq invasion when he said, so, to Martha Raddatz's question about two-thirds of Americans being against the war, my blood began to boil. In the future, someone's going to say to me, hey, did you hear about Vice President Cheney had a massive heart attack and died? My response will be, so? Yeah, you're not alone on that one. The following quotes were compiled by Christopher Cerf and Victor Navasky in their capacity as CEO and president of the Institute of Expertology, which has just issued a report on the experts who were wrong about Iraq before, during, and after the invasion. Under the title Mission Accomplished or How We Won the War in Iraq, the experts speak. Here, the experts speak about the costs of war. Richard Perle. July 11th, 2002, he was the Pentagon's Defense Policy Board chair. Iraq is a very wealthy country, enormous oil reserves. They can finance, largely finance, the reconstruction of their own country, and I have no doubt that they will. Lawrence Lindsay, White House Economic Advisor, September 16th, 2002. The likely economic effects of a war in Iraq would be relatively small. Under every plausible scenario, the negative effect will be quite small relative to the economic benefits. Kenneth Pollack, former director for Persian Gulf Affairs National Security Council, September 2002. It is unimaginable that the United States would have to contribute hundreds of billions of dollars and highly unlikely that we would have to contribute even tens of billions of dollars. Glenn Hubbard, White House Economic Advisor, October 4th, 2002. The costs of any intervention will be very small. Ari Fleischer, White House Press Secretary, February 18th, 2003. Iraq has tremendous resources, and so there are a variety of means that Iraq has to be able to shoulder much of the burden for their own reconstruction. Donald Rumsfeld, Secretary of Defense, March 27th, 2003. When it comes to reconstruction, before we turn to the American taxpayer, we will turn first to the resources of the Iraqi government and the international community. Paul Wolfowitz, Deputy Secretary of Defense. March 27, 2003. There's a lot of money to pay for this. It doesn't have to be U.S. taxpayer money, and it starts with the assets of the Iraqi people. We're talking about a country that can really finance its own reconstruction, and relatively soon. Mitch Daniels, Director, White House Office of Management and Budget, April 21, 2003. The United States is very committed to helping Iraq recover from the conflict, but Iraq will not require sustained aid. Dick Cheney. October 5th, 2004. The Allies have contributed $14 billion in direct aid. Actually, only $13 billion was pledged, and on the date Cheney spoke, about $1 billion had arrived. As of October 28, 2007, the National Priorities Project estimated that the share of Iraq war costs that had been borne by American taxpayers exceeded $463 billion. But the cavalier way these sons of bitches refer to another country. Yeah, they've got assets. They can pay for their own reconstruction. But who knocked everything over? Ah, that's right. It's astonishing. Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, Daniels, Cheney, Hubbard, Fleischer, Pollack, Lindsay, Pearl. On and on and on. This, by the way, that's in The Nation. The March 31st edition of The Nation. When this one is written up in history of all the bloody imperialistic conflicts that this country has gotten involved in the past 120 years, this one is going to be the classic example of the arrogance, belligerence, and imperialism put into play by a group of men who ran this country that was so off the charts in terms of the death and destruction and torture and shredding of the Constitution. Never has this country seen anything like this. So every time Bush talks about how history, you know, that thing that is from a long time ago, you know, or it hardly even counts, when history writes this one, I don't want to be around to read it. I'm serious. And when you couple this one with what we did in Vietnam, in Southeast Asia, oh, my God. Oh, as far as all those assets, more news today. Saboteurs blew up a major oil pipeline in Iraq today, reducing exports from the south for the first time in years. It was the first time since 2004 that this vital southern supply route has been disrupted. Officials had different views about how long it'll take to restore supplies and the seriousness of the incident. A South Oil Company official, speaking on condition of anonymity, said, "This morning, saboteurs blew up the pipeline transporting crude from Zubair 1 by placing bombs beneath it. The pipeline was severely damaged. Crude exports will be greatly affected because, well, this is one of only two main pipelines transporting crude to the southern terminals. We will lose about a third of crude exported through Basra." And on news of this attack, U.S. crude rose by more than a dollar a barrel to trade above $107. Altogether now, have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people? We'll be back after the break with your phone calls. Stay with us. Welcome back. 6:30 past the hour. We are getting many requests here for a link to the article that talked about the drunks deciding the war that Bridget wrote about. It is in the LA Times. You can go to latimes.com. And it is in the entertainment section where they review television programs. I have a long URL here, but there's no point in trying to give it over the air. LATimes.com, the entertainment news. It's a review of the Frontline program, and it's dated 24th of March. What's today, the 27th? So good luck in finding it. Within the next couple of weeks, the new MikeMalloy.com is going to be up, linked to the new NovaMRadio.com website. And when that occurs, we'll be able to put these links up. The website that we're using is one that was designed for us by a friend over 10 years ago. And it's like trying to watch movies on your home television using a Betamax. So LATimes.com, in the entertainment news section, reviews of the Frontline special entitled Bush's War. That's where you can get it. Oh, by the way, those of you who appreciate Greg Palast, and I'm certainly in that group, he's not been on this program for a while, but you can hear him this Sunday. He will be on Shelley and Anita Drobny's program on KPHX. That would be 1480 KPHX.com at noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time. Greg Palast. This Sunday, noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time, on KPHX 1480 on the Drobny program. Check it out. Okay, last one. This comes from you don't give me a name. Mike, here's a post on Soldier Voices. People need to visit these men and women to learn to interact, to try to understand. They are dying one after another, will it ever stop? And what emailer sent me, this is from soldiersvoices.net. Soldiers, or soldier, singular, soldiervoices, plural, .net, soldiervoices.net. Very quick. I was over in the U.S. last week walking on a sunny street in California. Enjoying the fine weather that Sunday afternoon, I walked past a flower shop. Looking in the window, I saw around half a dozen pictures of young men in dress uniforms. Their keen faces looked back at me, eyes filled with energy and confidence. I envied their youth. I felt so bloody old. As I was about to walk away, I wondered what these photographs were doing there. Some proud parent or recruiting gimmick? Suddenly, the sickening message of this display hit me. The flowers, the photos, the dead. Looking at the picture of one young Marine, he could barely be 20, just a kid, the loss hit me. Never would he know the pleasure of growing older or the love of a partner. Everything he was and would ever be was taken away from him. All the potential of life now reduced to nothing, and only the memory of his all-too-brief years. I sensed the pain of his family having to do the unthinkable task of burying their son, lost in some distant, violent act. And they placed his picture in this window among the flowers. So I ask those who talk of the heavy price we must pay, are all our sons and daughters mere currency to be lost on the folly of one man's vanity? SoldierVoices.net. Let's do some phone calls. Starting with Ron, who's listening on KSAC in Davis, California. Ron, you know, Monday.
I know, man. You're going to force me to buy a Sirius radio here.
or the internet, or, you know.
Well, I don't have a computer, so I just use a library. But I've been listening to you for 4 years now, and I don't know. Well, I got to listen to you, that's all. But this thing that we've been bearing is so horrific that when I interface with you, because you feel like a brother of sorts, I almost can't speak. It's like the words are, it's beyond words. It's, if I got astral travel, we could do eye contact and nod maybe, but anyway, regarding Iraq, I read No End in Sight, the book. There was a movie made by Charles Ferguson that's loaded with information.
Right.
And one of the things that I'm not sure if you mentioned is the approximately 4.5 to 5 million refugees.
Yes.
So we have 2.5 outside of Iraq and 2 million inside of Iraq. That would be equivalent to having 35 million Americans move out and 25 million Americans from the East Coast move to the West Coast.
Yeah, and we are just doing this because we just love the Iraqis and want them to enjoy the blessings of capitalism and freedom. Yeah.
Well, what drives me crazy is like some of the information you laid out, and of course the stuff I've been studying. You and I probably know more about what is happening in Iraq today than 95% of the Senate and the House of Representatives, apparently.
I think so.
And what is so, again, words escape me, but so horrific is that they don't even approach the truth. It's not so much that they're just blazing, roaring liars, of course, but they're spinning this stuff, like Bush is spinning this stuff out of some, you know, some phantasmagoric, pathological, lizard-like dream. I mean, he doesn't have a clue what reality is.
No, he doesn't.
And so when I read a book,
But he never has his entire life.
No, I know.
Starting with when his little sister died and his parents said, pay no attention to the corpse.
No.
Pay no attention.
Right, absolutely. And it's like I'm beyond, I don't know what I'm beyond with him. I mean, it's maybe he'll just, you know, spontaneously disintegrate because of his path. I don't know. But the other thing about Iraq that is never mentioned is that Saddam released 100,000 criminals.
Yeah, right before the invasion.
Yeah, so what's going on in Iraq today is so complex and so twisted that no one can really get a handle on it. There's corruption, there's crime, there's guys who...
And that's just on our side.
Yeah. But even in Iraq, and it's just absolutely mind-boggling. I'll tell you a couple of guys who really are into it. Is a guy by the name of Nir Rosen.
I think I've read some of his stuff.
Oh man, because he was there, and he knew individual warlords, and the Maliki just lives in a green zone in some hallucination that he thinks he's a government. He's nothing. And the army apparently is just, it's all sort of locally oriented. In other words, if you're connected with Muqtada al-Sadr, you know, and you're in the army, you're not going to kill any Shias in East Baghdad.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Muqtada is an Arab, and he doesn't dig Persian-influenced Shiites. So I just want to throw that in the mix. But it's incredibly complicated, and I'm thrilled that you're still with us and... I'm an agnostic, but blessings to you and Kathy and Molly, Mike.
Well, that's very kind. Thanks a lot.
Right,
I do appreciate you checking in, Ron. Take care. We have a break coming up here, and then back to your phone calls. We've got three open lines if you want to get in here. 800-989-1480. 989-1480. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
understand those who say you can't win this thing militarily. That's exactly what the United States military says, that you can't win this military.
Well, then, why do we have the military there? Never mind. 21 past the hour. Back to your phone calls. Greg is calling from Cleveland, Ohio, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Greg, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
I got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you want to fight this war at, in Iraq or in the United States? Because
what war?
We want to fight it one
what
place
war?
Or the other.
What
the war?
War
on terror. That's
what
war?
Started
all this, was the war on
the
terror.
The war on terror? What did Iraq have to do with the war on terror?
What do you mean, what did it have?
Exactly what I said, sir. You understand
that
English.
That is where
what?
Bin Laden
no, no,
was
no, no, no,
listen.
At. All right, now, I'm going to tell you something, pal. I don't mind you calling my program, and I will talk with you. You talk over me, you're gone. Do you understand that? This is my program, not yours. I don't come to your place of business and start ragging your ass. Now, if you want
to
talk like a
I
normal,
wasn't ragging on you,
like a normal,
you
all right, get rid of him. Just get him. No, get him out of here. Get him off my show. I told you, you don't come to my program, Greg, and talk over me like that. God damn it, that's not what this is about. And I don't like what you said anyway, so forget it. Where did I want to fight the war on terror? What war on terror? I'll tell you what I would have done. If I believed the story of what happened in this country on September 11, 2001, I would have worked with about 30 other countries in an international policing effort to bring the people who organized it and planned it to justice. The people who pulled it off are dead. I've told you people before, you right-wing nutballs, don't call my program if you think you're going to come in here and start busting my ass, because it's not going to happen. I control the buttons. I really do, just like George Bush, and I will just dump your call. I am wide open to having a dialogue with you. I am wide open to you talk, then I talk, then you talk, then I talk. But don't pull that crap on me. Just don't do it. I've said it before. I don't walk into your gas station or your fast food restaurant and start kicking ass and breaking up the furniture. So don't think you can do it where I work. Clear? Great. Michael is calling from the Bronx, listening on the internet. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm all right.
Some people never learn, do they?
Well, I just don't like half-asses. I really don't. I don't care who they are.
You and me both. But, hey, I got some news for you. You might have heard Hillary Clinton addressing a crowd regarding some kind of poll or some kind of rumor that her supporters were going to vote for John McCain if she doesn't get the nomination. She was pleading with them not to do that, that it's important to get a Democrat into the White House. Now, I wanted to share with you, being a New Yorker and a black man, of a similar situation that happened here 10 years ago with the mayoral race. It was the same formula. Rudy Giuliani, Republican, white man, and then you had a white woman, Democratic candidate, Ruth Messenger, who was a Manhattan Borough president, and then you had a black man named Al Sharpton, also a Democratic candidate. It turned out that Ruth Messenger won the nomination. The Al Sharpton supporters vowed to not vote mm-hmm. in November, and they didn't care one way or the other because Sharpton wasn't going to get in. He pleaded with his supporters to back up Ruth Messenger because both had the same interest and the same concern in getting
right.
Rudy Giuliani out of office. And people.
All right, Michael.
Listen.
Michael, let me ask you something. Why do you think the numbers I saw, something like 29% of Hillary backers say they will not vote for Obama, will vote for McCain, and 22% of Obama supporters said they will not vote for Hillary, will either not vote or vote for McCain. Why is this going on?
I wish to God I knew, and it doesn't make any kind of sense, especially when you have both candidates that dub McCain as the third George W. Bush.
Yeah, see, this is what pisses me off mightily about the American voter or the American public. We look at these contests, these actually life and death struggles, like some kind of a sporting event, like this is a soccer game or a World Series or a football game, rather than what it is. You know, and if my team doesn't win, well, then to hell with you, even though your team is pretty much the same as my team, I'm going to take my dollies and marbles and go home.
But you know something, Mike? This is what people got to learn about. This is no freaking game here. This is a matter of life and death. We are at a real-life crisis. And the people know that McCain is going to carry forth the policies of George W. Bush. What the hell would possess them to vote for him just because they're so pissed off that their Democratic candidate didn't win? They're both Hillary and Barack Obama. Share the same concerns and the same interests, and that is to get into the White House and end the Bush era. One of them's got to get in, and whoever is the nominee, everyone's got to come together and support that nominee, or otherwise do you want another 4 to 8 years of Bush mess in which you can become the next casualty? I don't know why people don't understand that.
I hear you. All right, Michael, I got to leave it there. Thanks a lot, pal. I appreciate you checking in. I don't understand this either. I, you know, this attitude, if my Democrat doesn't win, I'm not going to vote for your Democrat. Jesus.
My job is a decision-making job, and as a result, I make a lot of decisions, and it's important for me to have an opportunity to speak to you and others who would be listening, explain why I have made some of the decisions I have made, the basis on which I have made decisions, to explain the philosophy behind some of the decisions I have made.
Jesus, God, give me the ice pick. Oh, that feels so much better. It's about 25 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Sergeant Payne is calling from Daytona Beach. Is this the Sergeant Payne?
Well, you may be getting confused with Sergeant Slaughter, but I'm Sergeant Payne.
Well, but you're a professional wrestler like Sergeant Slaughter.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I've met him, and he's actually a very nice guy.
Have you ever whipped him in the ring?
No, I would have loved to, but I did not.
Oh, well, but, Sergeant Payne, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. I just want to thank you for giving me so much material for my act, wrestling.
No. Professional wrestling is not an act. Come on, Sarge.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was a Freudian slip there.
Yeah, I hear you.
Anyway, part of my routine is I go out like I'm a super uber Republican and get the crowd going.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I actually have to wear a mask depending on how I feel before I go out. So they don't kill me afterward.
Right.
But
when do you reveal that you're not necessarily, I don't think, an uber Republican?
Well, I'll get on the mic and start pumping the crowd up, you know, trying to get them going all American stuff. And then I'll, in the middle of it, turn it, and I'll point out to, you know, I'll pick someone that I think that should be in the military.
Uh-huh.
You know, right age.
Right.
And I'll start asking them questions, and he's like so dumbfounded.
Yeah.
And I'll turn on the audience, you know. But I get the material from your show and, you know, other people on the left that, I mean, it's just so funny.
Well, that's great.
How little what people know, you know.
I hear you.
So I have a match coming up this Saturday in Orlando.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and
is this a WWF match?
No, I did work for them before, but no, they have WrestleMania Sunday in Orlando,
right.
And there's another promotion running Saturday at the Orlando Fairgrounds, so it's going to be a good time.
Well, Sergeant Payne, you have made my night. I appreciate very much you calling. Do you listen to this program very often then?
Actually, I listen to it every night.
I need new material.
Well, bless your heart.
If you'd like to go to my page and just check out, I have a couple of videos.
What's your web address?
It's myspace.com/NEVARS Place PLACE. It's my first name backwards, which is Raven, R-A-V-E-N. So just reverse it and then.
Okay, play. Do it again because everybody listening went, oh, damn, I wish you'd say it again. What is it again?
N is in Nike, E, V is in Victor, A, R, S, E, L, A, C, E.
Okay.
So it's myspace.com/that.
Okay, all right. Well, even as we talk, people are going to be going there to see Sergeant Payne. Good luck with. Are you going to win this this weekend, or are you supposed to lose?
I don't know yet.
You know,
I go there with an open mind. I have a fun time.
Yeah,
you know, I love working the audience, and you know, believe it or not, I try to educate the audience.
Sure.
So
sure,
and
you know.
Thank you.
You do what you can when you can. I do the same thing, Sergeant. One more question. How do you make sure that you don't hurt yourself when you fly across the ring and hit the canvas?
Well, wrestling is like football and baseball. You have to train for it. You go to a camp,
right?
And you train for it. It's very difficult. No matter what people think of it.
No, it looks extremely difficult. It really does.
And you definitely have to know how to land and how to do it, and it's difficult. Now, you live in Georgia?
Yes, sir.
Okay, now my sister lives in Duluth.
Oh, yeah, that's right outside Atlanta here.
Yeah. I go there every once in a while, but it's a good time. I absolutely love wrestling. No matter what people think of it, it's a good time, and, you know, people have a good time with it.
They do. I have a whole clutch of adult male friends, college grads, one and all, and they love to watch wrestling on television.
Well, it's a male soap opera.
It is indeed.
Know.
It is. That's exactly what it is. Sergeant Payne, thank you so much for checking in tonight, all right?
Yeah. Now, can I say one more thing?
You certainly can.
Okay. You know, even though I do it as a gimmick, you know, I go out Sergeant Payne, I did serve in the military, and I was in Desert Storm under Papa Bush.
Uh-huh.
So, you know,
well, I kind of guess that's where you got the sergeant from. Very few people will adopt a military moniker without having actually been there.
Exactly, and that's why I added my gift. I actually wrestle as Sergeant Payne, the Super War Machine. So, you got to work what you have, you know.
I hear that. So, thanks.
But I really do thank you for spreading all the good stuff that you do.
Well, thank you, Sergeant Payne. I appreciate it. All right.
Everybody, try not to blow your head up.
I'm going to try. And you watch yours too, pal.
Yep. Thank you.
Take care. Take care.
Sir.
All right. Now, everybody focus on Sergeant Payne for his event this, what did he say, this weekend, Kathy, in Orlando? Well, that's a first for this program. Wow. I'm easily impressed. No offense, Sergeant. I mean, it was great. I'm glad you called. But we very seldom get celebrities. I mean, honest to God, celebrities on this program. Except for the people who call. They're, you know, never mind. David is calling from San Antonio, Texas. David, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Mike? You know, I'm going to tell you like this. As a Muslim, I respect your integrity. My respect for you really grew when the other night you apologized to the Clinton supporters for making a mistake. And all I'm saying is I just wish that more people in this business and politics possess the integrity that you do, Mike.
Well, that's very kind, David.
And I want to say one more thing, Mike. I told you before about telling all those truths, Mike. You're in a land where the people say, you know, where they coined the phrase, what they don't know won't hurt, man. You can't keep telling all these truths, Mike. You're killing them, man. You're killing them.
No. You know, I remember what Harry Truman said. I mean, I don't remember it, but I've read what Harry Truman said. He said, Kathy? People say I give them hell. I don't give them hell. I just tell them the truth, and they think it's hell.
And that Bush clip that you played before you came on, I was laughing before you even started. I mean, the sheer idiot of this man.
Isn't that something?
Is perplexing.
Isn't that something?
Oh, my goodness, Mike. I mean, I wish I had a book on that so I can read it and laugh and show people what type of idiot we've had in office for the last 8 years and to make sure that something like this never happens again.
I hear that, David. I hear that.
You take it easy, Mike.
All right, man. You too.
Love your show, man.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Take care. Take care. Robert is calling from Memphis, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Robert, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
I've never called in your show before, but I've been listening for a while now.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you for a favor, actually, and I could be a minority here. I would love to hear these Republicans explain their logic.
So would I. So would I.
But if you could let him go just a little bit longer.
Well, Robert, I've just got, you know, I don't have a whole lot of rules in this program. We're pretty wide open here. Our producers maintain some kind of order where it concerns language, you know, cuss words and stuff like that. But I've only got one rule that I can think of for right-wingers, and that is when they call this program, to treat this program with at least the same kind of respect they would treat Rush Limbaugh. I will give anybody a chance to state their case. And I will then, if it's something I disagree with on a real essential level, like if a right-winger calls, I am a left-winger, I am a liberal. And if somebody calls in with that point of view, a right-wing point of view, I'm more than happy to talk with them or hear what they have to say, because I have found that most of these people hang themselves. I don't have to do anything. But where I draw the line is when somebody comes into this program like a bull in a china shop thinking that they are going to dominate the conversation over talk me. That's not going to happen. And I'll tell you why. It's bad radio. You know, I don't care about it on a personal level, but it's bad radio. So I've made this as clear as I can so many times, and I agree with you, Robert. I would love to hear what some of these right-wingers have to say, but most of them can't put a sentence together coherently, or B, when you challenge them about something they've said, they start yelling and shouting and saying, well, what, you don't love America? You know, that kind of crap.
Exactly.
So I agree with you. I would like to let the right-wingers talk longer, but they control what happens to them when they call this program. It's that simple, all right?
All right, thanks, Mike.
All right, Robert, appreciate you checking in. And to any right-wingers out there who want to call this program, I've been saying it for 6 years. You are more than welcome to call the Malloy program and bring your idiocy on so that everybody who listens to this program can hear just what dumbasses you are. But what you have to do when you do that, I will give you the platform to show your idiocy. But don't come on this program thinking you are going to dominate and outshout and so on and so forth, because that's not going to happen for one very simple reason. I've got the off button. Jesus, don't you understand that?
When I'm gone, oh honey, though our friendship ceases from now on. And listen, if you can't say anything real nice, it's better not to talk at all, is my advice. We're parting.
Ten before the hour. It's a weird night tonight. Thanks to the crew, Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Chris in Minnesota, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Catherine Bay, who is our executive producer. Have you decided yet to become a founding member of Nova M? Well, we have some things coming up that are going to really make it worth your $10 a month, trust me, or $100 a year. So you just, you know, like I just said, trust me. If you're not a member, please join. We would love to have you as one of the founding members of Nova M. Go to NovaMradio.com and all the information is there. All right? Thank you. I appreciate it. Kevin is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, how you doing, Mike? I love your show. I've been listening for years, and so I'm a first-time caller. And I just want to give my comments about this upcoming election.
Sure.
First of all, I'll let you know I'm a Democrat.
Uh-huh.
And I foresee the McCain election. I'm going to give you my he's going to be the next president. I'm going to give you my analogy, and you tell me if you agree with it or not.
Okay.
First of all, I believe that probably Barack Obama is going to get the nomination for the Democrats. I don't think Hillary Clinton can pull it off. This is what I foresee what's going to have what the problem is going to be. First of all, if you look out through history, because I follow politics pretty much all my life, and if you really pay attention in the past 30 years, all the presidents from the Democratic side have come from the South. Clinton was from Arkansas. Johnson was from Texas. Alabama was Jimmy Carter.
Oh, Georgia.
Georgia. You're correct. So knowing that throughout the course of history, in my personal opinion, the people in the South are still living the Civil War, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So I foresee that either one of these candidates are going to be electable. In my personal opinion, I think Hillary has a better chance being that, you know, Bill's from Arkansas, so they'll win that state.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the swing states, I don't foresee Barack Obama winning the swing states. And everybody seems to forget the Ralph Nader factor here. Ralph Nader is going to wind up getting a lot of the independent votes that people saying that Barack Obama is going to get. So that's what I think that's going to personally happen. It's going to McCain's going to pull it off. And as Democrats, I perceive this as very bad because they need to come up with better candidates than what they have now. And that's what I foresee coming. It's just they're not organized like the Republicans are. The Republicans are very organized when it comes to elections, and the Democrats seem to fight one another tooth and nail.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the way to win elections, and it's not good. And that's what I mean, that's my opinion. I mean, do you agree with me or not?
Well, I'll tell you what, Kevin. What you're referring to, of course, is the racism that still exists in the South. But surely you know that that racism exists all over the country. I don't know how white Southerners are going to transcend that, white Southern Democrats are going to transcend that in this next election. If they want to vote the racism by voting for, if Barack Obama is the Democratic nominee, if they want to vote the racism and vote for John McCain, then the consequences of that vote will be theirs to enjoy and chew on for the next 4 years. And I mean that. I mean, I understand. I was, you know, I was born and raised in the North, and I've lived in the South for 40 years. So I understand the white Southern mentality. Trust me on that. I understand the white Southern mentality. And it's not universal. I'm not saying every white Southerner is a racist thug. Not at all. But I will say that probably the plurality of white Southern males are racist, and white Southern females too. It's just something that exists here. Now, if in this election, after all these white Southerners in the South, most of whom live below the average median income, and a lot of whom have contributed sons and daughters to this miserable, vicious war that Bush invented. If these white Southerners can realize that a vote this time for the Republican is against their best interests, like every vote for a Republican is against their best interests, maybe it'll turn around. Maybe that will overcome their inherent racism. I don't know. Maybe some of these rednecks down here will realize, well, Obama has a white mama and a black daddy. So that means he's only half a Negro. I mean, whatever it takes for these people to get outside of their racism, I hope it happens. I hope it happens. Over and over and over again. A lot of people like to date it with Reagan, the Reagan Democrats. But over and over and over again, Democrats have voted in a manner that just suggests they're insane. This started with Nixon with the Southern Strategy. Even Lyndon Johnson, when he signed the Voting Rights Act and some of the Civil Rights Acts that he signed, he said, you know, the Democratic Party has just lost the South for a generation. It's been more than a generation. It's been damn near three. So, you know, I hear what you're saying, Kevin. It's a valid concern. It's something I'm sure the Obama campaign thinks about every day. It's damn sure something the Clinton campaign thinks about because they, in a very subtle way, since they are white Southerner, he is a white Southerner, and Hillary by osmosis, they inject this racist attitude into their campaign efforts now. It's there if you want to see it. If you don't want to see it, then you're not going to see it. But black folks understand, and white Southerners understand. You know, when Hillary Clinton or Bill Clinton says something that that maybe white Northerners miss, we here in the South get it. We know what they're saying. So I don't know. Kevin, I hope white Southerners can transcend it. I really do. Man, I need a shower. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. Take care, all right? Seriously, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.